Hola, creadores y artistas y artesanos. Hi, Jen here. I just wanted to take a moment to say hola from Barcelona, Spain. Yes, Spain. Barcelona, that one. It still blows my mind. In case you missed it, we were fortunate enough to team up with Barcelona Knits this weekend. So a few months ago, I had opened our general email and there was a note from Barcelona Knits. I had heard of Barcelona Knits before. I had heard that it was wonderful, but I had never been. So I opened up the email and they had asked if we wanted to talk about a partnership. My mind raced immediately. I was so excited. I wrote back and I said, let's chat. So we get on a call. And of course, they're thinking we're going to do something virtual, right? Online. I had different plans. My gut was saying, get making to Barcelona Knits. So I propose to the team that we come to Barcelona. They were very excited, but also they needed to find a spot for us because the vendors had been in place, etc. I have no idea what's going to happen though, right? Like a girl can dream. Immediately, I hear my email ding and it was from Barcelona Knits and they had found a spot for us. I am so glad that they did. This weekend has just been absolutely wonderful. We felt so welcomed. Talking with people within this industry, within this area of the world, that are putting so much into changing systems within the wool industry that no longer serve, that no longer help build up and grow the industry so that they can turn around and help others so that they can create opportunities. People who are bringing others together to teach them their craft so that it is not lost, so that it doesn't just disappear. There was this balance of the feeling of needing to honor tradition, but also grow within this society that we live in. There is just something about this community, that is different. It's like I can't put it into words almost, but I'll try. Ashley and I have been talking a lot about the word community, right? Like what is true community, true connection, whether it is knitting a sweater or building a table or paper craft or sewing a quilt. We put everything that we have into those things. Putting that much heart and love, leading with empathy, really showing others that love that we can put into our art, we can also put into the community. From the vendors that we had already had conversations with over email to people that we had never met, we really felt true connection. So on Saturday, there was a dinner. It was a mixture of vendors and attendees. And there was one moment where I looked up and looked around and there was a drag queen performing. Music, people were up and dancing. They were hugging. They were laughing. It was like, it was just so joyous. It was so joyous. I wish I could have bottled that feeling for you all and sent it to every single one of you. I think that moment was meant to serve as a reminder that it doesn't matter how many followers we have or how many people have bought our patterns or how many skeins of yarn we've sold. We should always lead with kindness and joy and empathy. And I felt all three of those things from every single person I interacted with this weekend. So this episode is very special. Part of the partnership was that we were going to record a live episode of the podcast. I was lucky enough to be joined by Amy of La Bien Amie, somebody who I believe really does lead with kindness, joy, and empathy. A huge thank you to the Barcelona Knits team, Kiara, Eva, and Anna. I'm not going to cry again. I already cried at the end of our meet and greet interview. I am so grateful for each of you. You are the most special people. If any of you watching have ever thought about joining Barcelona Knits, whether it's an attendee or a vendor, do it. You will not regret it. Okay, I'm going to stop babbling. I hope you enjoy today's episode Making Conversation Live with Amy at Barcelona Knits. That's off. If you would rather clip it.
No, it's okay. I'll hold it like this.
I feel like holding it is.
Yeah, it gives me something to do with my hands.
I feel like I need to do my typical opening.
I would love that.
To the podcast. And it feels weird because usually I'm sitting at my desk and I'm talking to somebody on a computer screen like this one. So I'll just address you all. How about that?
Love it.
Hello, makers. Welcome to Making Conversation, a podcast where we chat all about making the app and the act. I'm Jen, head of marketing at Making. My pronouns are she, her, and my Making app username is Knit Pearl. Y'all, we're in Barcelona. We have different cameras to look at. We have a whole audience. We are doing this live. I've never done a live podcast. And I'm just excited mostly because of the person standing next to me and that we actually get to have a chat here in front of everyone that's watching, and everyone that's watching. Amy, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Jen. Oh my gosh. This is such a pleasure. I always enjoy when we get to catch up.
I feel like we've just become so close so quickly, and being able to be in this place with you has just been so wonderful. And then to meet all of you and to be in Barcelona and to attend this festival, I mean, this is our third event that we've done as the Making app, and it's been wonderful. The energy and the community here it's kind of like nothing else.
It's amazing. I'm so honored and blessed to be a part of this.
Yeah. Okay. So we're gonna get into some of your stuff real quick, and then we'll talk a little bit more
about the
topic at hand. Well, first of all, I mean, everyone knows who you are, but do you want to give a little brief overview?
I'll introduce myself for those of you who may not know me. My name is Amy Gilles. I was born Amy Osborne. I was born in Kansas, and I grew up in Kansas and did all my schooling and went to university there, graduated, and moved to France for my first job. And that's when I met my husband, within the first month of arriving in France. And that pretty much sealed the deal for me moving over to France. So for us to be together, we needed to get married. We knew we wanted to be together. And that was about 22 years ago. So, yeah.
That's amazing.
I live 100% in France. A lot of people ask me if I still live in the United States, and I live in France. Mm-hmm. And during COVID, one of my big projects was to get French nationality. Mm-hmm. So now I have French nationality, so I'm happy to say je suis française and American. So that's really exciting.
Okay, so how did you meet your husband?
All right, funny story. Well, I got a job teaching English at a high school, and I needed to supplement my income, so I got a second job teaching English at a local business school. And I was teaching these kind of rotating class that changed every 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. We're talking about current events. It was a conversation class. And my husband was in the first session that I was teaching, and he didn't come to class the first 2 weeks. So I didn't actually meet him right away when I started teaching this job. And he came to the last class because everyone in the class was like, you got to come meet the American teacher. She's so cool.
And wait. I've heard this story before. It wasn't that she was just so cool. It was also that she was so hot.
Cute was the
word. I'm sorry, cute. Well, both apply, it's fine. Cute.
So he came to class, and we had a lot in common. Back in the day, I was really into music and dancing. I was a DJ, and he was really into those things as well. And he came to class, and it was love at first sight. Mm-hmm. He was late coming to class too. So it was like this moment where everyone was sitting down and then he walks in at the end, and it's still a debate to this day if he did that on purpose.
Oh, okay.
But I remember that moment clearly when he walked into the room. It's like when you lock eyes with someone and you just know.
Yeah.
And I had that feeling right here in my chest where I was like, this is my person here. I don't know what's happening. So yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay. So we ask everybody this. What is your maker journey? Where did it all begin?
My maker journey began as a child. My mother is the reason why I do everything I do with Libby Anime. She's the one that taught me to knit. She taught me about crafting in general and the importance of working with your hands, actually. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I learned to seam and weave in my ends when I was 8 years old. That was what my mother taught me first before knitting.
She had priorities.
She had priorities. Yeah. I'm the oldest of five kids, and so she was busy knitting and making garments for us. And so I was already pretty good at cross stitch. I can't remember who taught me cross stitch because I think I was so young that it was either my grandmother or my mother. Mm. And she saw that I was very comfortable using a needle. And so she taught me how to do mattress stitch, which I remember very clearly. We used like this blue chunky yarn. It must have been like Red Heart or something, you know, with a big fat needle. And she showed me how to make the S of the mattress stitch. And I remember that memory so clearly in my mind. And she would say, if you do this correctly, then I'll teach you to knit. And being the perfectionist that I am, I had to do it perfect. And so I learned and I practiced, and she was very happy. And she's like, all right, now I'll teach you to knit.
Do you remember what your first cross-stitch piece was?
Actually, I used to cross-stitch, yes, presents for all of my family. There were like these little mini, you know, the little, I don't even know what the word is. It's like a little circle, and you would cross-stitch, and you put it in the frame, and then you could hang it on the wall. And I would make these little mini Christmas motifs. So it would be like a stocking or a little Christmas tree or a little Santa Claus face. And it was like small. I mean, they were like about this big.
Yeah.
And so those are the kinds of things that I like to cross stitch. I don't think I ever cross stitched anything bigger than that because I moved on to knitting pretty quickly after that. And I never went back to cross stitch.
You never did.
But I'm actually interested in going back to it now. So stay tuned.
Amy's next project, because she's not busy enough.
No, not at all.
I want to talk more about being a creative person as an expat and kind of how you found community and what the differences were. But first, we were talking the other night at dinner and you told me something that blew my mind. What is one thing that people don't know about you?
Okay. I can't remember because I think I told you two things that people don't know me, so I'll pick one.
And if it's not the thing, then I'll have you tell the other
then
thing.
Then you can. Yeah. Well, I'm half Korean, and I grew up in a bicultural house. My parents really raised me as an American growing up in the Midwest, but also as a Korean child growing up in the Midwest. We spoke Korean at home, and when I was a teenager, I want to say I was about 11 or 12 years old, this really famous grandmaster of Taekwondo came to Olathe, Kansas to open a school. It was a big deal. He was like the 1988 Olympic coach and things like that. And he came to open a school in my little town in Kansas. Kansas actually has a lot of Koreans. There's a lot of Korean community there. And so my parents, as an activity to do as a family, signed all seven of us up to practice Taekwondo. So my mom and dad did it too, along with my five siblings. And I remember we'd pile into our minivan and go practice Taekwondo. And my parents, they quickly stopped after getting their yellow belts. You know, they wanted to get us going, and we just loved it. And we all got our black belts. So all five of us have our black belt in Taekwondo. I actually have my second degree black belt, where my siblings, my sisters do as well. And I believe my brothers, they have their first degree black belt. And we competed in tournaments in the Midwest. My brothers were so good, they went to the Junior Olympics and did things like that. So yeah. So that's something that people don't know about.
So the other night, I'm walking, setting the scene here. I'm walking the streets of Barcelona with Amy and with, you know, the Labia and Amy team and Val. And we brought our stuff with us from here, right? So I have my computer and, you know, we've felt safe, but we've also heard stories about how you need to be very careful about your belongings that you're carrying with. And I just know I have my computer, which is how we're doing this and all of the other things that Making is doing here. And I'm it's the most important thing in my life. I'm holding on to it like this. And Amy's like, don't worry, I got you. And in that moment, I was like, okay, we're good. Being a creative person, an expat, how did you find community when you first got to Paris?
That's a great question. I moved to Paris in 2003. Mm-hmm. I had been kind of living in between 2001 and 2003. But I officially made the move in May 2003. It was the hottest summer in Paris. It was the summer of the canicule, so the heat wave. And I was coming straight from America and literally just moved into my boyfriend's bachelor pad. Actually, at the time, it was my husband's bachelor pad. And I didn't have any friends, and I had just come over with two suitcases. And at the time, the social media websites were MySpace and Friendster. I had a Zanga blog. So I was blogging at the time, and I was kind of looking for other Americans. I remember I found a woman named Amy, and she's still my friend today, on Friendster. And I wrote to her and I said, hi, your name's Amy. My name's Amy. Can we be friends? So she's from New Jersey, and we became friends. But I remember this was before Skype. This was before I had to like buy phone cards to go to the phone booth to mm-hmm. call my parents. Mm-hmm. And you would put money on these little cards and put them into the phone booth, and I'd call my mom. And I remember calling my mom and telling her how lonely I was. And she was like, Amy, go to the yarn shop. And she was like, go find a yarn shop and go talk to somebody there. Because my mom was very much a part of the crafting community in Kansas. She was a mm-hmm. quilter. She was a knitter. And she went to the yarn shop all the time. And so she said, go to the yarn shop and make a friend. And so I was like, okay, that's a great idea. Mm-hmm. So I did that. And I went to Bon Marché. So at the time, Bon Marché doesn't, the yarn shop doesn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. But at the time, they had this most beautiful yarn shop at the top floor of the shop. And I would just love to go and, like, just look at all the yarn. I couldn't necessarily afford the yarn at the time because I was a struggling expat. I was teaching English and trying to find my way. But every once in a while, I would splurge on some, like, Debbie Bliss or Rowan. I remember buying Rowan a kid silk case for the first time and thinking it was, like, liquid gold.
Yeah.
And, the woman who ran she ran like three counters. She did the Fildar counter and the Debbie Bliss, Noro, and Rowan. And she was closer to my age, and she was really young. And she'd ask me questions. She's like, where are you from? You know, and so mm-hmm. then we started to get to know each other, and then we became friends. And she was like, you know, I was asking her if there's knitting groups. And she's like, there's like no knitting groups. She's like, I don't know of any knitting groups. And so I was like, oh, I would be great to have a knitting group. Mm-hmm. Like an English-speaking knitting group. And so she didn't speak English, so she wasn't interested in coming to that group anymore. But I thought I could create an English-speaking knitting group. Yeah. So if you remember back in the day, and I think the website still exists because I looked mm-hmm. it up, meetup.com.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
meetup.com had just come onto the market, and I was like, I'm going to start a knitting group in Paris on knitting.com. And I just put it out there, and I said, let's meet at the Starbucks at Opéra. I went the first week, nobody came. Mm-hmm. The second week, one woman came. The next week, three women came. And then we just had this like group of like 10 women that would come like every week, and we would knit together. And that's kind of how I started my pre-community before I opened my cafe.
Yeah.
And that's where my dreams of opening a knit cafe kind of happened, because cafes in Paris were smoking still. So you mm-hmm. sometimes we would go to a cafe and then like there'd be like a dude smoking right next to us, and we were like knitting, and we're like, this is really gross. And yeah. come home and my knitting would smell like smoke.
And I not went, my precious yarn.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was just like, this is nasty and gross. And I would tell my husband, I was like, I want to open a cafe where it's non-smoking, and mm-hmm. and knitters can come and knit, and no one can smoke near us. And he was like, yeah, let's do it. You know, he's always been my number one supporter.
Yeah.
And that was where the idea for my cafe came to be.
I love it. Okay, so you found these people. You have a group.
Yes.
How did it differ? Or did it differ from your fiber community in the States?
Well, funny thing is like I didn't really have a fiber community in the States because I started knitting when I was younger, and then I got into athletics. So like I said, Taekwondo.
Right, right, right.
I was playing tennis at a very high level as well in high school, and I played intramurals in college. And so I was really focusing on athletics a lot in my teens and early 20s, and so I wasn't knitting that much. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I never really thought about knitting that much in my late teens and early 20s. It was mm-hmm. when I moved to France and my mom was like, go to the yarn store. And I was like, oh yeah, I remember how to knit. I know how to knit, you know? And so that's when I kind of came back to knitting again, is when I moved to France to look for knitters.
Everything felt like it was meant to be. Like the universe was like, okay, bring people together, and then that's where you're going to find your path, right?
Yeah. I'm a very social person. I think also being like the oldest of five kids, you kind of grow up being social. There's always mm-hmm. people around. I never had my own bedroom. I was always sharing it with one or sometimes two other siblings, depending on who was fighting at the time, you know. And I would say that I just really liked talking to people all the time. And that as a child, I remember our parents always yelling at us to be quiet because we were talking so much, all five of us at the same time. And I just would continue to be like that. I was in high school. I was the person who was friends with everyone. There's cliques.
Oh, yeah.
And I wasn't really necessarily into a specific clique because I was on varsity tennis, but I was also into science. Mm-hmm. And I also liked theater. And I spoke French. And so I would kind of just kind of crossed over in all these kind of groups. And I remember my friend saying to me, like, yeah, you're friends with everyone. And I was like, yeah. Yeah. So I wanted to continue to extend that. And that's kind of how I lead my life. I just really like meeting people, making friends, owning a cafe. Honestly, I talk to so many people. A lot of customers have become really good friends. Mm-hmm. Like Julia, who works for me, she was my client first. You know, she came to my cafe to knit, and that's how we met. And then having a yarn shop is the same way, too. Knitters come in, then what do they want to do? They want to talk to somebody about knitting and yarn, you know, so, yeah.
So if you're ever feeling lonely, go to the yarn shop.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's, like, the best advice. And I remember having my yarn shop when I did finally open my cafe, which was Paris's first knit cafe. It was called Oisiveté. I remember expats coming to me and saying, like, this is like a lighthouse for us. They could come and, like, hang out and, like, speak English mm-hmm. and not have to worry about, like, speaking French and things mm-hmm. like that. I get emotional.
I know. I'm getting emotional. It's beautiful. Yeah. Oh, okay.
These are puppeteers.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Oh, well, you are still bringing people together, even though you don't have a cafe, right? Everywhere you go, there is a community that absolutely feels the love that you put into your art through your yarn. And I think it's a beautiful thing.
Try to keep doing it. You know, I thought, like, during COVID, like, when we couldn't see people anymore, I was really struggling, but we found a way, you know. Mm-hmm. Zoom was this incredible way to, like, connect with people and even connect with people in a way that not necessarily everyone can travel to a festival like in Barcelona.
Yeah.
And I really loved the Zoom aspect because I could talk to people in, like, in the countryside in the middle of Kansas, where they would just, like, be like, I'm in Kansas, and I'm like, oh, I'm in France. I'm in Norway. I'm in Switzerland, you know. And I would love how we were getting all these people coming together during our Zoom events. And so for me, honestly, I think that's, like, one of my most favorite aspects of what's happened in the last 3 years is connecting through people in a digital way.
Yeah.
And I really want to kind of keep going towards that. Yeah. So we're going to start doing more stuff on our YouTube channel. That's why this live is kind of like me getting back into connecting with you guys via this medium.
So, yeah. It was really hard when we couldn't see people, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, so in marketing, there's something that is called the third place. And it's your first place is your home, your second place is your work, and your third place is where you find community. Mm. And for all of our lives, I would say, most of us, that was at a yarn shop or a yarn cafe or a coffee shop or whatever. And then when all of that closed down, the internet became our third place.
Yep.
And that's really where Ashley said, our CEO at Making, Ashley said, okay, it's time to do this app. It's time to give makers and the crafting community a space that is our own and is built on these values. And so.
Love that. That's one of the reasons why I'm really drawn to the Making app is I love how there's so many people who wouldn't necessarily be able to see my work get to see my work. Because nowadays with, like, I don't want to be poo-poo on Instagram because I like Instagram.
We're
too,
also live on. Please don't take us down.
It's not because of this, but the algorithm makes it really hard. You know, there's all these, like, rules that have been set by other people. And I love on Making it. We can just come and be.
Yeah.
And that's great.
And, you know, eventually there will be an algorithm, but we always are very, like, it's going to be used for good. Right?
I love that.
You're going to see people who you don't see, you know? It's going to be diverse in craft and human, and I'm really excited about it. We're always like, algorithm doesn't have to always be a scary word,
right?
Especially if it's built by people who, like, have heart and have a purpose and to, you know, create this thing.
I am 100% there for that.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay, well, we'll come back to this part, but I also wanted to talk to you about what it's like getting ready for a festival, what it takes, because, you know, everybody lines up and they're excited and, you know, people travel here and there is prep for that on the attendee side. But I want to kind of peek behind the curtain and see what it's like for the, yarn makers?
I've been doing shows. I thought about it last night. I think the first show that I did was in 2010. This was before La Bien Aimée was born. La Bien Aimée came to be in 2015. I was going as my cafe, and I was selling other people's brands. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I was selling brands from North America and Canada that were not really easily accessible in France. And so there's a couple shows in Paris that I would attend where I learned a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember the very first show we did, we just packed everything into a minivan, a cute little minivan. I had no idea how much to bring. We came and we packed it up. I had no lights. I was like, lights? We need lights.
Well, I feel like we know what that feels like. With our setup, we plugged in our lights thinking, this will work with a converter. And both went. And so we're just like, all right, well, this is interviews and we'll, won't be as bright. Okay. Nope. Yeah.
Exactly. Yarn shopping wasn't that easy.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was the first time that I was showing yarns that people hadn't seen before. So they were just really excited to buy it. And I didn't bring enough. I sold out before the last day and everything like that. And I learned to be able to calculate, like, how many square meters I have to sell in, how much yarn can I actually pack into there versus how many people will be coming to the show. These are all things that I kind of learned on the go. Lots of tips that I learned when I go to shows that I walk and look at other people's booths to be like, oh, that's a good idea, that system right there. Oh, those lights are really good. I mean, I just did it this morning. Our neighbors downstairs have these really amazing little skinny LED lights, and I was like, we need those.
Yeah.
You know, so that's another way to really learn is to go around and look, because there's always other people who are doing it better than me. I will admit that I'm not the best at everything, but I, like, strive to be the best that I can be. Mm-hmm. And I learn from other people. And so I actually really love going and looking at other people's booths and being like, oh, that's a good idea. That's a good idea. And taking note and trying it. And I know that I have brought some ideas on my booth as well, where I've seen people be like, that's a good idea. I want to do that too. Yeah. And so they've kind of converted over to the way that we maybe present our yarn or show things like that. And so that's kind of cool too.
For Barcelona Knits, when did you start dyeing for the skeins that you brought?
Well, my production is much bigger now, and I have a lot more people working for me. I want to say, honestly, I was very hands-off on this because I have a support team that works for me. And Julia, who's sitting here, she knows because she did it this year. She set everything up. Come over here.
Yeah, come on up.
Julia's right here. Julia, when did we start?
We started dyeing 5 weeks ago, although we did what we call the PO, so pretty much our list of yarn that we've been working on for at least 3 months. Mm-hmm. For festivals, we have to plan a very long time ahead. I'd say 6 to 8 months we plan ahead.
Yes.
And then we start making our list, and this we work on over and over and over again. Until we're happy with all the bases we're bringing, all the colors we're bringing, and until the very last minute, always thinking, we have forgotten this, or maybe we received a new product.
Yeah.
Like right now, we have new notebooks, and they arrived at the atelier 3 days before we left, and we thought we have to take them.
Yeah. So we threw them in our suitcase.
Yeah.
Our production is mixed. So, like, when we say that we were working on Barcelona's yarn for 5 weeks, at the same time, we're also dying for our online shop and our stockists as well. So we're kind of juggling many hats. But, yeah, my team, we meet on a regular basis. We use a project management tool to discuss when I'm away, because I've been away a lot this year. And so I would just kind of follow along virtually. And this was one of the big steps that Julia helped me with this year.
Because I was coordinating. On book tour.
Coordinating
everything with you. Making sure we remember everything and you know about everything, and you know, just working together, that's what we do.
And you know what, every show where we think we got it right, there's always something that kind of went wrong. A couple months ago we did Nitty, we forgot the screws for the shelves.
We had no way of
screwing them and making them stand up. And so,
would you say you were screwed?
Well, I mean, we didn't in the moment, but that's funny.
I'm always here for those. Yeah. So if you ever need one, just let me know.
Luckily, my husband, he's like, he calls himself a couteau suisse, like the Swiss knife. And so he was like, went to the hardware store and figured out something. And
that's amazing.
And then what did we forget this time? We the French gray.
Yes, we forgot. We brought Helix French Grey on mini skeins instead of full skeins because somewhere along the way, 100 grams became 25 grams. You know, there's just many people. I mean, many people. A few of us work on these projects together. And so, you know.
Something must have gotten auto-corrected or just absolutely copy-paste wrong. And then
it
we ended up.
It was definitely a copy-paste error. And it's just, it happens every time. I'm like, this time I thought of everything. Yeah. And every time I said, Amy, I thought of everything. We are so prepared.
I know that feeling.
Yeah.
Thank you, Julia. And I just want to say, like, when you do a show as well, like, don't stress about it.
Yeah.
Like, this happened, and, like, literally, I let myself have, like, 30 seconds to be like, ugh. And then I was like, okay, we'll move on from it.
Move on.
I'll find a solution, you know? And we did. We did find solutions, and it worked out great.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad, Julia. Thank you for saying that. It makes me feel better. We're not alone. We're not alone here. You think that you're prepared all the way down to the last. But, you know, this is our first international festival. So something was bound to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, the moment that we came to set up, I plugged something in and
fuse. We heard the fuse box go pop and the electricity was going on our roof,
too. The American did something dumb.
Aww.
We fixed it. It was fine.
Yeah.
But I think that really, I don't know. I feel like what I'm hearing in my head is like, it's kind of a lesson, right? Like, we can't hold on to mistakes.
Yes, absolutely.
In everything. Yeah. And that includes our craft, right? Like, we're always learning.
Always.
When was the last time that you like had to tink something back because you accidentally made a mistake?
I tink all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm
yeah.
working on this like crazy intarsia bandana. I had done a whole row of motif with like 12 different colors, and I looked at it and there were like two pinks that were too close to each other right in the middle.
Oh.
And I was like, oh well, rip the needle out, rip it back and do it. And I it's just something that I kind of put into my mind a very long time ago. I remember being a young knitter and being frustrated and being like, I don't want to knit this because I just wasted all that time.
Yes.
I don't see it as a waste of time. I changed the narrative for me. So for me, it's just like this little meditative moment of tinking back. So when you're frogging intarsia, you can't just take the needle out and rip it. That was a lie. I didn't do that. I had to unknit every stitch and go back. And so what I do is I like to put on a podcast, or I'll put on a TV show that I'm watching, or listen to something and just focus on that. And so I have these podcasts that I listen to that are the frogging podcasts. They're usually scientific based or like just like talk podcasts, because then I can sit there and listen to them talking and I'm not focusing on, oh God, I have to undo this.
Yeah. And you're learning.
And I'm learning. Yes. And I make it a relaxing moment, you know. And I always say to people when they're learning to knit, frogging is knitting. Knitting is frogging. Mm-hmm. You will unknit. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was teaching knitting in my cafe, I would have people knit like four rows. Yeah. And then I'd come by and be like, all right, everyone, pull your needles out. And they're like, what? And I was like, just do it. Pull your needles out. And I was like, and rip out two rows. And they'll be like, and I was like, just do it. And then they did it. And then I give them a smaller set of needles. And then I pick up those next stitches again.
That's the, okay. Any teachers out there that's, I don't know why I never thought about
practicing that part. I taught my daughter this immediately. Like when she first started knitting, because she got super frustrated. She'd come to me every 5 minutes. I'm like, Mommy, fix this for me.
Mm-hmm.
I said, no, I'm going to teach you how to fix it yourself. And I ripped the needles out. She was knitting a Sophie scarf. And she got really upset, and maybe that was a little hard on her because she has some anxiety. But we sat down together, and I said, "Breathe. This is gonna be fine." Like, Mommy took out a smaller needle. You're gonna pull this out. I said, "It's really fun too." And she was like, "Yeah, this is fun. You know, like pulling it out, because it is fun to frog. It's like fun to pull it out." And I said, "And you're gonna take that small needle, and you're just gonna go in those little loops. You're gonna loop, loop, loop. You know." And I was teaching her a little thing just to remember while she's doing it. So now when I hear her knitting, and I hear her going loop. I know what she's doing exactly, and she knows now
so
how
cute.
To frog and pick up her stitches.
Mm-hmm.
I've taught her how to drop down and pick up the stitches and pull them back up again.
Yeah,
you know. So
I love that. That's
I think those cool. are those kinds of lessons in knitting are really important to teach very early.
Yeah,
very early, because you have to frog to knit.
Yes.
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 Unknit to knit.
Every time that I've like posted something on TikTok about like, you know, here's how to do this, or look at this thing that I've made. I do feel like I get a fair amount of comments of like, I'm so scared to do more than just like a scarf or, you know, even a hat.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I just always respond like, it's going to be fine. Like you have to do the thing to, cause how many times have we all learned something new within knitting and you're going through it and you're like, oh, this wasn't hard. And why was I scared of this? You know?
Absolutely.
And so it's just like moving forward and trying it out. And
yeah.
It's not scary because either you tink it or it is a design feature.
Absolutely. I love this. There's always a little mistake in everything that I knit. I'll have a stitch going the wrong way, or sometimes my big thing is I'll drop a stitch because I'll be knitting and not paying attention. You know, you'll knit like this and you have that stitch down there.
Yeah. Yep.
Whatever. I just pull it in the back and I sew it down and it's done. Whatever.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Love it. Okay. So back to festivals. So you've done many, obviously.
Yeah.
Do you have any tips for, people who are maybe coming to a festival, just tips in general, because I mean, it sounds like you learn something new every time. So
it depends on if you're going to be traveling, even traveling or traveling far away. So we've done local shows where we're just going to load up the truck and drive it like 20 minutes away, do the show.
Mm-hmm.
Or we've also loaded up the truck and drove from Paris to Edinburgh when we did the Edinburgh Yarn Festival.
Mm-hmm.
We always have the key things that we always take with us. We have a thing called a booth box.
Mm-hmm.
The booth box is like a toolbox that holds everything that you may need. And it has like the most random things in there. It'll have like sticky tacks, pins. We have Velcro tape. Like, I don't even know why I need Velcro tape, but every show we need that Velcro tape, you know?
Yeah.
And so I keep putting that in there. Pens and scissors, all kinds of things. Needle and thread. You know, all kinds of, there's even knitting needles in there. We have zip ties, you know, everything that you can think that you might be able to jerry rig something.
Yeah.
So you have to be like, I put my MacGyver hat on and be like, and sometimes I would see like a tool sitting around, all those little Allen wrenches and those little wrenches from IKEA, they're all in there because you just never know which size of wrench you need
mm-hmm.
in that moment. And I'll see a little a tool like, or I'll be shopping at a hardware store. I saw like tablecloth clips. And I was like, oh, I'm going to just grab a package of those, throw them in there. I've used them.
Yeah.
You know, and things like that. And again, when you go to other people's booths and you look at their setups too,
mm-hmm.
I love the people next to us. I was really impressed with them. They shipped their yarn already prepared in the boxes. So all they had to do was just pull the lid off and it was boom, done.
God.
I was like, that's next level.
Yeah.
Because that's like, that's what I want to do. Things that we do that make it easy for us is because we have a booth, so we make a table in the front. We started doing the one of each box where it has one of each of every single one of the colors and bases
mm-hmm.
so that when we pack, we just take that out and put it on. And then this time we even took it next level because we have the stock. So half of the stock would go on the shelves behind us and the other half just goes immediately under the table.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that we don't have to even touch that second half bag because it's just going straight under the table.
Yeah.
And that really sped up our prep.
Nice.
So like, yeah, little things like that. Think about a booth box. All the little things that you need. Trash bags. A sponge,
mm-hmm.
You know, I put tampons in there. You know, you just never know what you need. Aspirin, you know, just everything like
everything.
That. Yeah.
A squishy standy mat.
Yes. Actually, that was something that we were talking about this year. I was like, we're going to buy mm-hmm. a squishy standy mat that we just roll up and just ship with us and take with us.
I mean, I'm going to invest in one for our kid because
yeah.
it's, you know.
Because you're just standing and doing this time and it's really hard on your knees.
Yeah. Oh, should we show our exercise that we were doing
yesterday?
Oh,
yeah. Yesterday we were doing.
Okay. So if you're at a festival, first of all, don't lock your knees because that's what I was doing yesterday, not realizing it. So at the end of the day, Amy and I got together and we were doing.
We were bending our knees, but also like it's hard because I wear a dress. So I like bring my knees up. Like doing like a standing
and then,
squat,
yep.
and I bring them up like this, and you'll see
We've
me walking around doing
festival exercises
this.
Happening now. So these are pro tips,
yeah,
by Amy.
Pro tips, don't lock those knees.
Don't lock the knees. There's been a lot of new festivals popping up,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
What would you say is something that you have seen that's maybe unique or interesting that makes it easier for vendors and or attendees?
I think that being very clear in communication via email and communicating often is really important, putting all the information that the vendors need, because we don't have a lot of time. We're all doing many things to email and ask questions. And so, for example, like Barcelona Knits, they send us everything into email. And like this year, I saw that they made a little event pack for the vendors, which we had everything we needed. everything we needed, and we printed it. And so we don't necessarily have time to look on our phone, plus the phone's really small. So we have this like printout, and everything was in there, and I thought that was so great. Mm-hmm. You saw something too that I didn't see when people were queuing up.
Yeah, the attendees outside, there was a line because there's a lot of you that want to buy yarn. Shocking. And there were people who had carts, and they were asking people if they had their ticket and if they needed to buy one or if they needed a wristband. And so they were handling all of that within the line so that when you got up and you could go in, it was just seamless.
And you just go straight in. And that's a great idea. I've never seen that before at a show, actually.
Also, Sacred Sheep in Portland, we were just there, and they had put together I don't know what the program was that they used, but I'm sure I could find out from Rachel. But to enter the festival, it was like an outside area. There was a giant tent, a coffee cart, a bar cart.
Nice.
And two different food trucks. And you could enter the festival and hang out there and knit and meet people, get a coffee, get a drink, whatever you wanted to do. And then you would get a text message when it was your time to go into the building.
Love that.
Isn't that great?
That's a great
idea. I was like, ooh, okay. Yeah. Or you could just go the route of Jess and Flock and just like quadruple the space that you have.
Yes.
In the second year.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I think the key for having a successful event is having enough space.
Yeah.
So that people can circulate, because it's really hard on the attendees, but it's also really hard on the vendors too, because if we have a very small space behind our booth to work from, so you can imagine we have a very reduced space, then we have this whole wall of people where they have a reduced space too. So if we can make the alleyways bigger so that people can circulate, that's really nice. That's really nice.
Lots of room is great. Okay, is there anything else that you feel would be helpful or interesting that people just don't know, like attendees of festivals don't know about being a vendor?
For Barcelona, we had 4 hours to set up. Mm-hmm. And I am coming in my work clothes, no makeup, my hair is like disheveled, and I am putting out the yarn, and we're trying to get everything done in those 4 hours and perfect everything, you know. Yeah. And some people want to come and chit chat. I'm like, I'm sorry, can we talk tomorrow? And so I try to be as nice as possible.
Of course.
Just be mindful that the vendors, this is the time limit that we have to do this. And it's also the same for breakdown too as well. Like a lot of times we have to catch flight, you know, so we only have a certain amount of hours to get everything done before we have to run to the airport and catch flight home and things like that. But most times, I don't know, just come and say hi. I really love it when people do come by the booth and say hi. And so just come say hi and be like, hey, what's up? And be mindful that, like, if we're, like, in the trenches working, like, if I'm down on my knees on the floor doing something, I'm
just imagining somebody, Amy, hi.
It's happened.
What are you doing? Oh, can we take a photo? They, like, get down on the ground with you.
But I think most vendors feel this way too, because they're just trying to get, you know, their booth set up.
Yeah. Well, and it always takes longer than you think.
Oh yeah, always takes
longer. And we're not even selling yarn, and we're like at setup they were like, Jen, Val, you got to get out.
Yeah, definitely. And that's not because the organizers are, like, you know, being mean. They rent the space for specific hours. Mm-hmm. And so anything beyond those hours, they might get fined or they might get overcharged for that, you know, and things like that. And that might make it so that they can't come back the next year.
Yeah,
so it's like just we want to be really mindful of those kinds of things, too, for the organizers.
One of the things that especially Ashley and I, but we've been kind of continuing the conversation outside of our internal talks, is talking about what community actually means. I think community is a term that's thrown around a lot. You know, we kind of have landed on this thing that community is connection, right?
Yeah.
And true connection. And it can be found in person and online. But I do think that there's nothing like the energy of meeting people in person, right? There was one person who came up to me and was like, oh my gosh, I saw you at Sacred Sheep in Portland, Oregon.
Wow.
I was like, what?
And we're in Barcelona.
We are very far from there.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And just having those moments is wonderful. What are some ways that you feel like we could take this, like, true community and grow it past just, you know, this weekend?
I really enjoy engaging with my clients on social media. Mm. I know that the algorithm dictates that I have to post reels and things like that. I'm talking about Instagram specifically, but I love it when people leave me comments and actually further the conversation, because I do come back. I do read all the comments. So if you see that I haven't read, it's probably because I'm sleeping or traveling, or because we're also in different time zones, but I will come and like it or respond. Mm-hmm. And that's a way to kind of further the conversation a little bit. Email us. We really encourage people. I feel like people forgot how to email lately. I don't know. It's like all about, let me send you a DM. I'm like, why don't you send me an email? Mm-hmm. You know, maybe that's my age. Maybe it's like, I still like writing letters, you know. Yeah. I would love to receive letters. And I do actually get some really nice handwritten letters from knitters who come to me at events, and they give me a card, and it's really sweet. And I keep them all. Mm-hmm. I think that just reaching out. Mm-hmm. I want to say to people, like, reach out. There's been a lot of people who've emailed me recently and said, like, oh, I saw you at a recent event, but I didn't have the courage to come say hi. And mm-hmm. I said, and I write back and say, like, I'm really sorry that we didn't get to connect, but I would really love to meet you. And please don't hesitate to say mm-hmm. hello, because that first hello can be an open door to something new.
Yeah. There was a very similar situation that I recently had at Sacred Sheep. We were in between doing our vendor interviews, and they came up to the table. We were doing button making, which we really wanted to do here, but carrying a button maker from the United States to Spain was a little bit hard.
That's a little heavy.
Maybe next year. Well, yeah. But we were just chatting, and she was like, I've been wandering around here, and I haven't talked to anyone because I'm nervous. And it was just so nice that I just went for it, right? Mm. And I think that's true community, right?
Yeah.
Just always feeling like you can have a conversation with somebody, no matter who they are. If they, you know, if they are a very, very famous yarn maker or like a designer or whatever, I think that we're all human at the end of the day.
Yes.
And so I love that you are so open to that. And I mean, even wandering around here, you know, we went and got a coffee, and like, people were stopping you, and I was like, I'm with a celebrity, but a celebrity that talks to people, right? And everybody felt so special, and they're always going to remember that moment.
They make me feel special. That's the thing.
That's the, yes.
Because I feel special, and it's emotional sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Are you going to cry again?
No, I'm not going to cry again. Oh my God. I don't know what happens when I come to making. You guys make the feelings come out.
Well,
no, in a good
it's
way.
It's standing so close to a Cancer Pisces Cancer. That's really the water is flowing.
I don't even know. We have to talk about that in another podcast. Yeah, I need an explanation.
Will. Yeah. Well, I need to learn more. Does anyone know a lot about astrology?
Yeah.
Okay. And does anyone know a lot about astrology?
Well, if you're watching this, leave a comment, because I want to know more. I'm a Taurus, by the way, but on the cusp of a Gemini. So I feel like I'm both.
Okay. Well, we also need to find out your other two.
I don't know what that is.
I know.
But well, yeah. So if you know, like, leave a comment. I want to know more.
Yeah. Okay. So where were we at? Community. Is there a specific interaction that really comes to mind? Like, that every time that you think about attending festivals, there's like a really special interaction with somebody?
I think it's just the spontaneous interactions that mm-hmm. I really enjoy the most. This year is the first year pretty much that I haven't been behind the booth. Usually when I come to do my shows, and it's like what you said earlier, you're like, I've never seen you actually do a show. Like, I'll go and I'll be doing a talk or doing a meet and greet or something. Mm-hmm. But this is like, you come to Barcelona Knits, it's like there's the La Bien Aimée booth where we've brought our yarn and I've got my team with me. Mm-hmm. And this is the first time where I've actually been able to stand on the outside of my booth and let my team do what they do, and they do it really well, and have people just spontaneously come up to me and talk, and I can actually be like, yeah, let's talk, you know, and I really enjoy that. I really enjoy that aspect. So, yeah, I want to do that more.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. I have been asking everybody this question.
Okay.
If you were to be able to craft... knit. We'll just say knit because that's your preferred. If you were to be able to knit anywhere in the world and you could bring one person, anyone, friend, family, or somebody famous, who would it be and where would you go? And they don't have to know how to knit because you could teach them.
This is a hard question. Okay, so I know I've been asked a variation of this question. If I could knit for somebody famous, who would I knit for? Mm. if I wanted to go somewhere and knit with someone, I would still take the person that I would knit for. So I would like to knit for Jean-Luc Picard from Star Trek. So this is Patrick Stewart, Sir yes, Patrick Stewart.
Sir.
I would love for him to come with me, and I would just like want to talk to him and yeah. listen to him tell stories. Mm-hmm. During the pandemic, one of my favorite things to do was like turn into his lives, and he would read poetry. It was like the best thing ever.
That's amazing.
It was the best thing ever. Plus, I'm a big Star Trek fan, so that's like the other little secret thing. And Jean-Luc Picard is my favorite captain. So,
Okay, well, now we're manifesting. Sir Patrick Stewart, are you watching? I want to know what you're working on. What's on your needles?
I'm working on bandanas. I released this pattern called Le Bandana, which was my version of a small scarf, and you're actually wearing it, like really nice timing. Yes. But I love to wear little scarves. In Paris, you see all the French women wearing like a little foulard or an écharpe or something around their neck, and I really adapted that. And the bandana is my favorite shape to wear. Mm. I was like, I can make a knitted bandana. Let's make a knitted bandana, right? So I released the basic recipe of Le Bandana, and then I continued to knit. I think I've knit like 16 now. I just keep knitting them because it's the perfect travel size. It's small enough to take mm-hmm. with you. So I released a second pattern called Le Bandana Basic Intarsia. So this is for people who are wanting to dip their toes in intarsia but maybe have never done it before and want to have some fun with color. And so we can try that one. Mm-hmm. And if you go to my reels I just posted last night, I'm knitting on another crazy intarsia bandana right now. We calculated last night at dinner, when I get to the apex of the bandana, I'm going to be knitting with 16 colors to get all the way through that repeat, and then I get to decrease, and it goes in, and then it'll decrease down. But I'm excited. I actually got really excited last night. Julie's rolling her eyes over here. I got really excited when I thought of it. I was like, yeah. And I think that's like the most numbers of colors I've knit with mm-hmm. before.
Well, and you were knitting it on the airplane.
Yeah.
I would love to know like the thoughts of people around you because there's lots of yarn.
The guy next to me, he was like really staring hard at me and he was like this.
You stressed him out.
And Julie was sitting on the other side of the aisle knitting with us. But that flight was, there are other knitters on that flight. So I think people were not too fazed by it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, all right. I'm going back to community. We have built an app for makers.
Yes.
So Making, I don't know how many of you kind of know the backstory, but Making was a magazine for about 8 years. And then, you know, as things go, Ashley wanted to evolve because mm-hmm. that's Ashley's always wanting to go to the next thing and evolve and grow and all of that. And so, she had this idea of building an app specifically for makers because, you know, we've always had to take places that are already built and make them our own. And sometimes even places that are built for us are not accessible to everybody or, you know, it's people who are thinking about the bottom line and not about the people who are sharing their art and selling their art and putting their heart and soul into what they're doing. And so that's really why Ashley wanted to build this app. So we are about to launch the second part of the marketplace. So Making is a social marketplace app for anyone that is watching and does not know what we are, who we are and what we are, but does have a social aspect, which is that big community part that and connection part that we are such a fan of. And then there is the marketplace. And right now it's PDF patterns. So designers can sell their PDF patterns, but soon, within the next couple of weeks, we will be launching the ability for people to sell supplies and also finished goods. And it will just be that. There will be no drop shipping allowed. So it is a place that you can go to and find handmade items or things to create with.
That's
amazing. Yeah. And we've been talking behind the scenes about some special stuff that's coming up. So stay tuned for that.
Yes.
But why are you so, I know that you're excited about Making because we talk about it a lot.
Yeah.
So I'm not just like throwing this on you and assuming
No.
But why are you excited about Making and what we're doing in the app?
I love this because this is going to be something completely different than my own online store that I already have. That's been around for a long time. I'm excited to be able to curate new exclusive things just for the Making app marketplace. Mm. It makes my mind buzz. I like come into work and I'm like, Julie, I have another idea for this. And so we just write it down. So that's something to look forward to, you guys, for your LBA fans who want to get some new and exclusive things. Obviously, we'll keep putting things on our online store as well. But then we'll have the exclusivity. That's going to be through the Making app and something special. And it won't be something that I'm going to mass produce either. It's going to be really special things that people can come and get. These are going to be like maybe close to heart colors where I go into the studio and make maybe only 10 skeins. And then they just show up on the Making app and people can go and grab them if they want. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, I will not buy them all, I promise. The insider information. It's fine. It's fine. That's exciting. And we're just so thankful because there are people who have their own shops and they have it down, right? We understand that. But really, it's what we're doing this for is to give people that opportunity.
I'm excited to shop those makers.
Oh my gosh, right?
Yes.
I'm so excited.
Me too.
So,
me too.
I love it. Okay. Well, now I'm going to give my spiel. So if you go to themakingapp.com, you will see the Android and the iPhone versions, download and join. This is just the beginning. If you have ever joined a social media site at the very beginning and there's that like excitement getting the username that you actually want.
Yes.
And
Knit Pearl.
Yeah.
I mean, she has the best username.
It's true. I know. There's a story about that. There was a shop in Portland called Knit Pearl, Portland, Oregon, and it was a yarn shop. And right when Instagram came out, I signed up and took Knit Pearl.
Yeah.
And I was shopping in their shop one day when I was visiting Portland, and I went up to buy, and I was like, you know, I just want to, you know, sorry I got the name Knit Pearl. Like, that's kind of my thing everywhere. And they were like, Instagram? And I was like, oh, okay, well, they weren't there yet.
Oh.
So, but I did get tagged a lot after.
I bet you did.
For people purchasing yarn and tagging Knit Pearl.
Before we met officially, I like stalked you for a long time because I was like, this girl has Knit Pearl as her handle. She has to be cool. I was like, that's a great.
You told me that, and I was like, you stalked me? My goodness, thank you.
My goodness. But that's the excitement of going onto a new social app. Mm-hmm. I remember those days, you know, back when Flickr popped up and Instagram came around. I was so excited when blogging came about. You know, I mentioned Friendster, Zanga. I was, like, really early adopters of all those websites, too. So I'm very excited. So Lebby Nimi is on Making.
Yeah.
Come say hi and come follow us. I've already been posting for a while now. So come join the party.
Yeah. Knit Pearl, as you know.
And Lebby Nimi.
Yes. I think the other part of it is we're very loud about our values. It's very important to us to lead with compassion and kindness and basically just sharing the voices of those that need to be heard.
Yes, I love that.
And everything that we're going to do is built on those values. So
amazing.
No matter what moves we make within features and all of that, just know that if you go to themakingapp.com/about, there's a whole list there and you'll be able to see that. But we hope that you'll join us and all of you here too and all of you watching. I keep trying to remember
multiple,
that we've got three
audience cameras.
First time for me with that. Usually if it's more than one audience, it's like my dogs on the bed are watching me podcast and then I have this one-on-one. This has been really exciting.
Yes.
And I'm just so thankful that you are here and that you've joined me and that all of this worked out. And I'm so thankful for all of you. I mean, there's nothing like this community here.
Yeah.
I feel like Barcelona, the fiber community and everyone that's come to visit, I've felt so welcomed by everyone. People have come up to us and just had conversations, and the people that I've met for all of our meet and greet interviews that will be up in the Making app once I can get to editing them. Everyone's just been so wonderful. So I'm just going to say it. Everyone needs to come to Barcelona Knits next year.
Yeah.
So keep an eye out for the schedule. Buy tickets. I hope I will see all of you here as well.
Another selling point for Barcelona, it's like summertime here at the end of November.
It's so true. I mean, well, it's a selling point, but also for knits, it's hard.
It's for knits. No, it is, but it's a destination.
It is,
and
yeah.
I have been doing the show from the beginning, and it's mm-hmm. growing in a way that's really exciting. It could be, I think it's a premier European show. So.
Yeah.
We'll always be there, so I would love to see you, so please mm-hmm. come.
I know. I'm hoping that we'll be back next year.
Yay.
We will be back next year. Yeah, the there, manifestation
it's been
thing.
Said.
Yeah. Okay, so we always end with a moment of gratitude. That's how we end every podcast episode of Making Conversation. So, Amy, what are you grateful for?
I'm grateful for all the knitters, all the makers. Honestly, it's because of you that I continue to do what I'm doing. It really motivates me, honestly. I get so excited when someone comes to me and says, look what I made with your yarn. Mm-hmm. Or look what this, it helped me through this moment in my life. Mm-hmm. And I love that. So yeah. I'm grateful for all of you.
I mean, same. we are building this app to make a better space for this community. And I was in this community before I started working for Making. Mm-hmm. Every time that I get to connect with somebody that is maybe in the app or has seen a podcast episode, or even, you know, somebody who like knew what Making Magazine was, and even though I wasn't working there then, comes up and is like, tell Ashley I said hi, or anything like that. It's just so special. And I don't know, it's why we're doing it.
Yeah,
so
this is why we do what we do.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you all for coming here, joining in person.
Yes,
thank you for joining live. Thank you for watching. And we'll see you in the Making app. Bye.
Bye.
And scene.
Okay.
To join the amazing global multi-craftable community in the Making app, go to themakingapp.com. Download the app, sign up for an account. You can track your projects, post updates to the feed, and browse patterns in the marketplace. So let's talk about the marketplace really quick. I am so excited. We are about to launch what we're calling Marketplace 2.0. So right now, designers can sell their PDF patterns in the Making App Marketplace. Soon, makers will be able to sell supplies. So yarn, notions, woodworking tools, anything like that. Because we are multi-craftable, of course. A marketplace filled with handmade goods and supplies for people to create with. Wow, what a concept. And dropship will not be allowed. So truly, a creative space. If you're interested in selling on the Making Marketplace, go join, download the app, play around a little bit, make some new friends, track some projects. If you're interested in sponsoring Making Conversation, send us a note at hq@makingco.com. Or, you know, if you want us to be at your event, we'd love to hear from you. I hope you enjoyed this very special episode of Making Conversation. All right, y'all, Barcelona is calling. It's time to go explore. I'll see you in the Making app. Adios.